Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yeah, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig. You can wrap an old fish in a piece of paper called change. It's still gonna stink. John McCain says he's about change too. Except and so I guess his whole angle is watch out, George Bush. Except for economic policy, healthcare policy, tax policy, education policy, foreign policy, and Karl Rove-style politics, we're really going to shake things up in Washington. That's not change. That's just calling some the same thing something different. But, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
All right. The useful idiots are cheering. Little do they know that the man has just slipped and fallen. And he's fallen and he's hanging himself by his own petard. And this is the question for the Savage Nation today. Obama's being put on the couch today. And I'm going to ask, how bad is Obama's woman problem? Not does he have a woman problem, because he does. But I'm going to ask, how bad is Obama's woman problem? Why am I doing this? Because it's true. Barack Obama compared Sarah Palin to a pig with lipstick. There is no question about it. This is the beginning of the end of Obama's campaign. But we have to ask ourselves, what exactly is Obama's problem with women? Why have so many women abandoned his campaign in droves? To find the answer, we must return to Obama's childhood and examine his relationship with his mother. In 1961, Obama's mother, Ann Dunham, married Obama's father, a man from Kenya. The man from Kenya soon abandoned the family. Within 3 years, they were divorced. In 1967, his mother married another man, this time an Indonesian. A few years later, she was divorced again. Through all this time, Obama's mother went globetrotting from Hawaii to Indonesia to Pakistan. Sometimes she took her young son with her. Sometimes he was left behind. What appears to have happened to Obama as a result is he developed symptoms of what psychologists refer to as an Oedipal complex in Freudian terms. In an Oedipal complex, a male child is fixated on his mother and competes with his father for maternal attention. I want to repeat this for many of you because Freud, although is no longer popular, he was a towering giant compared to the Lilliputians in psychology today. And much of what Freud wrote will eventually rise again back to the towering genius that it was, while the Lilliputians of today who debunk him and say that behavioral psychology or drugs are all you really need will be forgotten. So let me repeat again. I think in analyzing this as an amateur psychologist that Obama has developed a very serious Oedipal complex. Again, I will repeat that in an Oedipal complex, according to Freud, a male child is fixated on his mother and competes with his father for maternal attention. In such cases, a critical point of awakening occurs where the child realizes that the mother has affections for others besides himself. In this case, Obama had to compete with multiple paternal stand-ins and was never fully able to bond with his mother. The result seems to have been a resentment towards women that he has never been able to get beyond. Furthermore, excessive separation within an Oedipal complex often leads to a sense of helplessness that can in turn lead to patterns of idealized control and self-sufficiency. Did you hear what I just said? This complex often leads to patterns of idealized control and self-sufficiency, which I think shines through in his often arrogant smile. Now, Obama's mother sent him to live away from her when he was 10. And again, he was sent away when he was 14. It seems clear that this excessive separation in the absence of a father has led to a pattern of idealized control that Obama has not only imposed on himself, but now wants to impose on the United States of America. Obama's mother was a free spirit who traipsed around the world following her own self-interests. And while there's nothing wrong with that in itself, you cannot ignore the effects that such narcissism has had on her children, especially when one of those children wants to be the president of the United States of America. It seems Obama has a woman problem. He wants both to win their approval and control them at the same time. Unfortunately for him, Sarah Palin is not the kind of woman who responds well to control. Millions of women like Sarah may be traditional in their love for men, but they are feminists in terms of self-reliance. Attacking such strong women in an attempt to control them has never worked and will not work for Obama. I'm Michael Savage, and I approve of this monologue. Questions for today. Do you think Obama has a woman problem, as evidenced by lipstick on a pig? Do you think he has an Oedipal complex? And therapists in particular, those of you who are traditional therapists, if you agree with me that he has an Oedipal complex, how bad a complex is it on a scale of 1 to 10? What do you think Obama's Oedipal complex would rate? 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I would especially welcome calls from real psychologists and psychiatrists who understand the context in which this is presented. I know it's unusual for a mere talk show host to dare suggest that he can analyze a potential candidate, but let me make this very clear. Everything is at stake in this election. This is an unknown man. We know nothing about him. McCain is a flawed man. McCain is a middle-of-the-roader. McCain has many political flaws. But let me tell you something. We know John McCain very well. We've all lived with him for most of our lives. We know that his father was an admiral. We know his grandfather was an admiral. And we know that John McCain can be trusted when it comes to national security. We don't know that about Obama. And we have every right. Moreover, we have an obligation, never mind a right. We have an obligation to analyze this man and not be afraid of people in the media saying that we have no right to do so. I am going to say that he has a very serious Oedipal complex because of the abandonment by his mother and her continuous relationships with other men and her narcissism, her apparent narcissism. And I believe that although he has overcome this with his marriage to the lovely wife and the children, I think he's overcome it beautifully on a personal level. I do not think he's overcome it entirely, as evidenced not only by his comments about Sarah Palin, lipstick on a pig, but also by certain aspects of his demeanor and his attitude. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. I am posting this monologue, Obama on the Couch, How Bad Is His Woman Problem, for your reading enjoyment on michaelsavage.com. Houston, Texas, Scott, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Afternoon, Doc. Pleasure to talk to you. I am a psychiatrist, and I deal with the Oedipus complex both with children and with adults. And a trend that happens in the adult side of someone who cannot shake it is the female counterpart, in this case we're going to look at his wife, actually becomes shelter for the now adult male. So he's found that love. He's found that attraction. He has that wife, but
yes,
she is more the controlling part of him. And, of course, we're not going to see it because it's Obama on the stage, not his wife for the most part. But
right. So, but Michelle is more or less a mother figure for him, you know, as is true in many marriages, not just in his marriage. But this man is not an ordinary man. He wants to be the president of the United States. I frankly think anyone running for the office should be analyzed. But, you know, you are a psychiatrist, probably a little older on the order of someone who grew up in Freudian, studying Freudian psychiatry. Am I right?
Actually, I'm 32 years old.
Oh, you got me full there, because the younger guys don't believe that Freud has any validity.
The younger guys don't read enough. Unfortunately, I grew up in a generation that's incredibly lazy and is phased out by video games and Cleveland Notes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm saying you are a psychiatrist in the sense of, are you an MD psychiatrist?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you're the real McCoy, as opposed to the overnight degrees from shady little colleges where they practice family therapy and things of that nature and tell everybody that they're gay and to simply leave their husband or wife and follow their inner gayness. That seems to be the be-all and end-all. If only you follow your inner gayness, you'll be perfectly happy for the rest of your years. But getting back to the seriousness of this discussion, do you believe that I am onto something here with my analysis of Obama with regard to the Oedipal complex?
Absolutely, because, I mean, it does exist. Like I said, there is a trend that can exist throughout the lifetime of a male human being, and what happens is they find a steady female in their life, and it can be a best friend, it can be a wife, which is what I'm going to use in this situation, and that becomes the center of the world. That becomes the yes, the
well,
no.
Let's go back to Bill Clinton for a minute. This is an interesting discussion now. Bill Clinton, didn't he have an issue with a mother who had a sort of clouded past?
You know, I'm not.
Let's put that one aside. Let's say a man has a mother who is unreliable emotionally to him. Let's put it in a more broad context. That kind of man can go many different directions, obviously. The human condition is unlimited in what it can produce. But very often that type of relationship between a mother who's flirty, flighty, multiple partners in cases, I'm not reflecting Obama here or Clinton, that type of guy can seek security through a steady relationship with a woman and then cheat on that woman for the rest of his life in order to, in some ways, get even with his mother who was cheating on him.
Absolutely. That person is going to mimic and mirror a lot of those things that he saw in his mother. His mother being a role model, having multiple partners and things of that nature, he's going to mimic that throughout his life.
Now, we then get to the next issue of several allegiances. Now, this is very intriguing. As this campaign has wore on, the old war horse, McCain, has become steadier. He's actually shockingly steady. I thought he would have already given up by now. I'm shocked that the man has this much guts, but he's the right stuff. I don't think anyone can get through naval aviation training and not be the right stuff. This guy is slow and steady right to the end because he's an old war horse, as I say. Obama seems to be breaking apart and making some mistakes, and I think that we're seeing parts of him that he's had very well controlled until now, Scott. Do you agree with that analysis?
Oh, absolutely, and he's flipped up, you know, several times, but the media hasn't blown it up. I remember he made one comment in regards to if one of my daughters got pregnant and made that mistake at a young age, and he was speaking in regards of abortion, and he used the words mistake and things of that nature. He has slipped up. He's made several slip-ups, but of course no one's going to hound in on it, and no one's going to pay attention to it.
Well, that's why we're putting Obama on the couch today, and I conclude that I think he has a woman problem. I don't know the degree to which this Oedipal complex is operational, but I think his slip of the tongue with the lipstick on a pig comment indicates a contempt for women that has already backfired on him, and all the king's horses and all the king's men will not put Obama together again. Thank you for the call. This is the Savage Nation. As usual, the unusual. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the one and only Savage Nation, as usual, the unusual on the program. Today we are analyzing Barack Obama's woman problem because there's no question that the Oedipal complex is operational in most people. Certainly not. He's not unique in that regard. Okay? In an Oedipal complex, a male child is fixated on his mother, what child isn't, and competes with his father for maternal attention, what child doesn't. The question is, what effects does it have upon the adult? Some adults get hung up in the Oedipal complex, and they don't get out of the womb of the Oedipal complex, or they have a partial birth into adulthood, while a part of them is still stuck in the womb of the Oedipal complex. This is serious business here. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I think any candidate for the presidency should be analyzed. And if analysis today is so meek and so meager in the media, real analysis other than what color tie are they wearing, I think it falls upon the educated talk show hosts of America to do this. So we're looking at his woman problem, the pig on a the lipstick on a pig comment. Yes. Now, I have excerpts from the story of Barack Obama's mother. I didn't write these. I didn't make them up. These are from Time magazine from April 9th, 2008, by Amanda Ripley. One, when I think about my mother, Obama told me recently, I think that there was a certain combination of being very grounded in who she was, what she believed in, but also a certain recklessness. I think she was always searching for something. Next quote. Today, Obama is partly a product of what his mother was not. Whereas she swept her children off to unfamiliar lands and even lived apart from her son when he was a teenager, Obama has tried to ground his children in the Midwest. He said, we've created stability for our kids in a way that my mom didn't do for us, close quote. So he's admitting that his mother was a bit of the flighty Sharon-go-lightly type. Quote, my choosing to put down roots in Chicago and marry a woman who is very rooted in one place probably indicates a desire for stability that maybe I was missing, close quote. Nothing uncommon about that. Now, here it goes. Shortly before she moved to Hawaii, his mother, Stanley, by the way, this is an interesting one. His mother had a man's name, Stanley. That's because his father, his grandfather wanted a boy. Did you think about that one? The grandfather of the mother wanted a boy. He didn't have a boy. He named her Stanley. Shortly before she moved to Hawaii, his mother, Stanley, saw her first foreign film, Black Orpheus. And it was an award-winning musical retelling of the myth of Orpheus, a tale of doomed love. By the way, I saw the movie. It's unbelievable. The movie was considered exotic because it was filmed in Brazil, but it was written and directed by white Frenchmen. The result was sentimental and to some modern eyes patronizing. Years later, Obama saw the film with his mother and thought about walking out. But looking at her in the theater, he glimpsed her 16-year-old self. I suddenly realized, he wrote in his memoir, that the depiction of childlike blacks I was now seeing on the screen was what my mother had carried with her to Hawaii all those years before, a reflection of the simple fantasies that had been forbidden to a white middle-class girl from Kansas, the promise of another life, warm, sensual, exotic, different. You hear this? This is an amazing analysis that he is telling you that I am using to alert you to the fact that the lipstick on a pig comment did not come out of the blue. In fact, the lipstick on a pig represents a deep-seated resentment and anger towards women.
Well, that's all right, Mama. That's all right for you. That's all right, Mama. Just any way you do it, that's all right.
It is the Savage Nation. How bad is Obama's woman problem is the question of the hour. It's not, does he have a woman problem? It's how bad it is. I mean, the lipstick on a pig thing, did it? Now, some of you are going to get upset by this, I understand, because you don't deal in these kinds of things and you think it's unfair. But I want you to pause and think for a moment. Psychological nudity is the catchword of the Savage Nation, has been for 15 years. And, of course, my new book by the same title, Savage Radio Stories, contains a lot of psychological nudity. So I'm applying it to Obama in a situation that does warrant attention. This is not a mild mistake. This is a major league error. It's already cost him a lot of women votes, and it's going to get worse now. And I think he's now on the defensive, and he's going to start to make more mistakes. Incidentally, if you can name one story from my new book, Psychological Nudity, when I get you up online, you're going to get a free copy of the book when it's released October 15th. So I suggest you rush to my website, michaelsavage.com. Hit the thing that says click here to see the contents. And get ready when I say to you, can you name one story from my new autobiography? If you can, I'll send you a free copy. Now let's go on to the issue at hand. Excerpts from the story of Barack Obama's mother, continued from Time magazine from April. So he saw a movie called Black Orpheus, and he didn't like it. But when he saw the film with his mother years later, he wanted to walk out. He thought it was simplistic. But he looked at his mother in the theater while they were watching it, and he said he saw his mother's 16-year-old self. I suddenly realized, Obama wrote in his memoir, that the depiction of childlike blacks I was now seeing on the screen was what my mother had carried with her to Hawaii all those years before, a reflection of the simple fantasies that had been forbidden to a white middle-class girl from Kansas, the promise of another life, warm, sensual, exotic, different. When Anne told her parents about the African student at school, Barack Obama Sr., they invited him over for dinner. Her father didn't notice when his daughter reached out to hold a man's hand, according to Obama's book. Her mother thought it best not to cause a scene. As Obama would write, my mother was that girl with a movie of beautiful black people playing in her head. In other words, the mother, was a nice person who didn't really see the context of a human being, right? In 1971, when Obama was 10, his mother, Ann, who's Ann? Isn't Ann the grandmother? In 1970, I thought the mother was Stanley. Oh, Ann Stanley. I thought it was Stanley Ann. In 1971, when Obama was 10, his mother sent him back to Hawaii to live with her parents and to attend Punahou High School, an elite prep school that he'd gotten into on a scholarship with his grandparents' help. And I want to pause on that for a minute. Many of you think that he was a poor kid. He wasn't. He went to Punahou High School, very expensive high school. Then the mother decides to go back to Indonesia to do field work for her PhD. Obama, then about 14, told her he would stay behind. He was tired of being new, and he appreciated the autonomy. He was tired of traveling to new places, and he appreciated the autonomy his grandparents gave to him. Now, he was in Indonesia at one point, and he didn't go back with her. Now, Obama on the couch, how bad is his woman problem, psychological nudity, 1-800-449-8255. Ben, New York City, WOR. You're up on the Savage Nation topic, please. Ben, go ahead. Ben, are you there?
Okay. Ben. I beg to disagree with the the female complex. I think, because I've been in marketing and I've been before like 10,000 people easily. And most of the people that go, he was searching. He was in search the whole time for a father figure. And unfortunately, most of the ones that I see that have done that, most of them get lost. And he ended up getting
lost. To what I said. According to Freud, in an Oedipal complex, a male child is fixated on his mother and competes with his father for maternal attention. But excessive separation within an Oedipal complex, a flighty mother, leads to a sense of helplessness. You understand what I'm saying?
Stan.
Okay. So what is your point then?
My point is he didn't really have a mother there, and he never had a father. Okay? His father was like a rolling stone. Okay? And
well, the first father left, to go to Harvard and then went back to Africa. He really only knew him he was 2 years old. The second father and the mother got a divorce as well. So she was apparently abandoned by him as well.
Right.
Okay. But so he was looking for both a mother and a father. In some ways, he's a lost soul.
Right. He was a lost soul, and he was looking for a father figure because that's what men look for, what they're missing. And that's the ones who
are. All right. I hear you, but it's not exactly what I see. Now, let's look at Oedipus Complex once again. Again, you don't have to be a psychiatrist to follow this. In the Oedipus Complex, a boy is fixated on his mother and competes with his father for maternal attention. But every boy does that when he's an infant. When you become a man, certainly along the way, you're supposed to move past that. The opposite, which is the attraction of a girl to her father and rivalry with her mother, is sometimes called the Electra complex, according to Freud. Sexual awakening. At some point, the child realizes that there is a difference between their mother and their father. Around the same time, they realize that they are more alike to one than the other. Thus, the child acquires gender identity at that point. The child sees a difference between mom and dad. If it's a boy, he says, I look like dad because of the anatomical similarities. Or the girl says, I look like mom because of the anatomical similarities. And in most people, the child acquires gender identity at that time. The child may also form some kind of erotic attachment to the parent of the opposite sex. That often happens. That commonly happens. And while the child may not have a full understanding of what sexuality means, there are some kind of primitive physical sensations that are felt when they think about the parent in question. There's no question about that. It's there. Many of you will deny it, but it's real. What jealousies occur? The primitive desire for the one parent may also awaken in the child a jealous motivation to exclude the other parent. If you're a parent listening to this, you know all of this is going on. You have to be a parent to understand this truthfully. Or you have to be a well-educated single person to understand this. Otherwise, it's almost going to go right over your heads, and you're going to say, well, what is all this gibberish? Well, as I say to you, this show is, as usual, the unusual. Don't expect me to sit here and talk about the ordinary because it's boring. A critical point of awakening occurs when the child realizes that the mother has affections for others besides itself, and then that leads to jealousies. Now, by the way, opposition to parents may not necessarily be sexually based. I want to repeat that. Opposition to a parent or parents may not necessarily be sexually based. This can also be a part of the struggle to assert one's identity and rebellion against parental control. That's also very common. However, there's a critical aspect of the Oedipal stage, which is loosening of the ties to the mother of vulnerability, dependence, and intimacy. This is a natural part of the child becoming more independent. It's facilitated by the realization that the mother desires more than just the child. The child has to accept that the mother desires more than he or she. The Oedipal move blocks the roots of sexual identification love back to the mother. She becomes a separate object removed from his ideal self. Thus, she can be the subject of object love. Then it becomes a little tacky. And then the father's role comes in, and I don't want to go into that right now. Because his father was absent. There was an absentee father. And so the boy returns to the mother as a separate individual in the Oedipal complex. And that becomes an issue as well. Then his mother died when he was young. So you can read more of this on your own. The fact is that there is a relationship between a mother and son that is unique in all cases. Not all of us emerge from this relationship unscathed. In fact, I would argue that most, if not all men, emerge from the mother-son relation with deep scars. There's no question about it. And it's only a matter of the extent of the pathology that becomes worrisome. Do I have to give you the extreme examples? No, I don't have to mention them. There are extreme examples. But the troubles that many men get into are directly related to an imperfect relationship with their mothers. And the reason we're talking about it today is because the lipstick on a pig comment has triggered a cascade of discussion across America and certainly throughout the Savage Nation about what in the fact is Barack Hussein Obama's woman problem. And that's why we're going into the Oedipal complex. Again, I want to tell you that excessive separation within an Oedipal complex, which he had because his mother was continuously leaving him, leads to a sense of helplessness that can, in some cases, turn to patterns of idealized control and self-sufficiency, meaning a sense of overconfidence, which I think shines through in his often arrogant demeanor, where he says, I need nobody. I'm in control. I don't need a mother. I don't need a father. I'm sufficient unto myself. And that can be very dangerous because that unto itself is a narcissism that can lead to a disaster for a country. Needless to say, there are many examples of leaders who were narcissistic and they were catastrophic for the nation they were trying to lead. You understand that? 1-800-449-8255. Again, I have an offer out to you. If you can name one story from my autobiography and you get up on this show, you're going to get a free book. Utah, Spencer, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
The story I remember was Dead Man's Pants.
You win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Did you read that off my website?
No, I actually remember when you told it on the show, and it stuck out in my mind because I remember doing the same thing as a kid because my family wasn't rich either.
Really? Your father brought on pants from dead men and cut them off at the knee?
Yeah, much. It was like a thrift store and just... I mean, this is what you get, so there you go, son. So either that or...
Oh, my God. I thought that only happened to me. I really did. I'm glad to hear it. Where were you, though? In Utah or somewhere else at the time?
Utah.
They did it to kids in Utah also?
Yeah, it was either cut them off or wear them off as you walk them, so...
Oh, no, it's an interesting story, Dead Man's Pants, Spencer, and you are getting a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Stay on the line. Because... I mean, just to lighten things up a bit, you talk about parents and things. If we were poor, my father had a secondhand business. And very often he'd go in and buy a whole so-called estate from the dead, you know, man's wife or whatever. That included the clocks, whatever was there, the jewelry and some clothing. You know, no one wants to, you know, the women usually give that clothing away. So my dad, God rest his soul, would bring home the clothing. And God forbid if in the lot was a suit from Hart, Schafter and Marx or a good suit, I knew it was like a death knell for me. He'd roll out the fabric like hey, Michael, come here. And I knew what was coming. Look at the fabric like this. Tomorrow you're going to get, and he would send it to the tailor, would come back, but it wasn't tailored. They cut it off at the knee. I looked like Abbott and Costello. So the same thing was done to you in Utah, huh, Spencer? All right. Thanks. Stay in the line. Get Spencer's address. We'll send him a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Nick in Chicago on WIND. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, when pasta was spaghetti.
Okay.
But my point,
you're also going to get a free copy of the book, but let's hear what you want to say about Obama.
Well, yeah, Obama insulted Sarah Palin and then denied it. So to my eyes, that makes him a vulgar liar. He's undermining himself. So I say let him keep talking stupid like that. And Obama is the pig in this situation, a male.
Well, we don't have to go there. I'm trying to keep this on a more dignified level, Nick. We don't have to call him a pig. He did make a mistake. He did. He's jealous of her. She came along as the new kid on the block. She attracted all the attention he originally had. He had that all to himself. He was the new kid on the block. The Republicans pulled a rabbit out of the hat. They pulled out Sarah Palin, and the whole world said, oh, my God. She attracted a lot of attention. He was no longer the center of attention. He got jealous. So this slipped out because he's tired, and the real self is starting to come out. Stay on the line, Nick, and we'll send you a free copy. No more free books in this hour. They'll go to the next hour. Sacramento. Bill, Sacramento, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes, you mentioned something the last segment about you think that the president or any potential president should undergo some psychological screening, and I just it struck a chord with me because people lower down the executive ladder, such as policemen, all have to go through voice stress analyzation and psychological screening before they can even wear a badge. So it surprises me that...
That's right. In order to get a job to protect the president in the Secret Service, you have to go through a lot more than what I'm doing on this program. So I'm doing the job that the American people actually should be doing, which is analyzing the candidates.
Absolutely.
Well, no, let's apply this to John McCain, because this is an easy one. I haven't even thought about it. Let's do this together for a minute. John McCain's father was a distinguished admiral. His grandfather, distinguished admiral. John McCain is as rock solid as they come with regard to national security and patriotism. And I think that there's no question about that. And I think that's all the people are thinking about right now. They don't know what to think about Obama. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255 phone number. If you disagree with me and you have a rational reason to disagree with me, and you say, no, you're wrong. It's not an Oedipal complex. It's not at all that. It was a simple slip of the tongue. Call NPR. Don't bother me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Wake up, little Susie. Wake up. Wake up, little Susie. Wake up. We've both been sound.
As usual, the unusual on the Savage Nation. Obama on the couch. How bad is this woman problem? He compared Sarah Palin to a pig with lipstick. This is the beginning of the end of Obama's campaign. But exactly the question today is, how bad is this problem with women? And where does it come from? And as we're doing this, a story just came out on the web about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the Democrats who have received the most amount of money from them. And get ready to hold on to you. Because I've been saying, why haven't the Democrats said that they're going to investigate the directors of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac? How come they're silent on this? Answer. Because the boards have given money to Chris Dodd, $133,000. John Kerry, $111,000. Barack Obama, $105,000. Hillary Clinton, $75,000. Rahm Emanuel, $51,000. Frank Barney, $40,000. Nancy Pelosi, $32,000. And Steny Hoyer, $30,000 between 1989, these figures are, and 2008. Now you understand why Senator Chris Dodd, chairman of the Senate Banking Committee, who has received the most from Freddie and Fannie Packs and employees, why he's not saying he's going to investigate. Now you understand why we the people are screwed. That no matter what is done, no matter how wild and violent it is, we get nothing back because they buy out both sides of the aisle. That's why we need a third party. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Obama on the couch, how bad is this woman problem? A special offer on psychological nudity expires at the end of this month. I suggest you go to my website and order it now. By the way, I'm serious about this. Today is the 9th of September. The 11th, which is Thursday, is my so-called drop-dead day for the printing. I need to know if you want the book. Let me know by Thursday. If I have extra copies, you buy them. If not, I'm not going to have them for you. And that's the end of it. It will not be in bookstores until January or February of 2009. And that's another time to get it. But if you want it now, or you want it, then you want one of the first printing, first editions. Today is the 10th. Oh, my God, it's Wednesday already. Wow. I feel like my mother is talking to me through the air. I hated school as a kid. You wouldn't believe I went so far in school because I always hated it. and I hated to go to school. I didn't want to get out of bed. On Wednesday morning, my blessed mother would wake me. Come on, Michael, she said, get up. It's just today, tomorrow, and Friday. She cajoled me through the week. What could you say on Monday? It's five horrible days. Tuesday, you don't even say anything to the kid. It's still four horrible days. But on Wednesday, already the weekend's just around the corner. She said, come on, Michael, it's just today, tomorrow, and Friday. No, I hated school. I hated it. I don't know how I lasted. Bachelor's degree, two master's degrees, a PhD. I don't know how I did it. Well, it's because I loved learning. I hated school. It's two different things. It's like I love God and I love the Bible. I'm not too crazy about houses of worship. Let me put it to you that way. I'm not good with formality. I'm not good with structure. Okay? I'm into substance, not structures. I'm not into edifices. I'm into the actual nakedness of the soul. And then brings us right back to psychological nudity. There we are. 1-800-449-8255, San Francisco. Beverly, welcome to the program. Topic, please.
I want to talk about Obama's psychological state. Maybe you've noticed that he doesn't take criticism and he becomes very angry if anybody criticizes him, speaks about Michelle. Psychologists call that low ego strength. I would find a leader in the White House very frightening. Look at how we've criticized Bush. I don't think Obama would take it.
Oh, yes. I hear what you're saying. No, I hear what you're saying. For all of his failings, I haven't seen Bush become a fascist yet. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if the Democrats wouldn't go to the fascistic level, given their inclinations for total control. And given, I hear what you're saying, this guy could freak us out with some decrees to stop the criticism. He could say this is not going to be permitted in the country. It's not fair. It's not good for the country. And anyone who criticizes me will be sent to prison. Well, that's what we get when we get a narcissistic egomaniac who's also given towards a total control, a control freak. 1-800-449-8255. Obama on the couch, I bet it's his woman problem. Play something on the way out, such as Wake Up Little Susie or whatever woman song you want to do. I'll be here for another couple of hours. You know, I'm going to get a glass of water now, and then it's it.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Education Week says Obama hasn't made a significant mark on education, that he's elusive on accountability, a staunch defender of the existing public school monopoly. Obama's one accomplishment? Legislation to teach comprehensive sex education to kindergartners. Learning about sex before learning to read? Barack Obama. Wrong on education. Wrong for your family.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
John McCain says he's about change, too. Except, and so I guess his whole angle is, watch out, George Bush. Except for economic policy, health care policy, tax policy, education policy, foreign policy, and Karl Rove-style politics, we're really going to shake things up in Washington. That's not change. That's just calling some the same thing something different. But you know you can't. You know you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig. You know you can. You know you can. You can wrap an old fish in a piece of paper called change, it's still going to stink.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said.
Mama said, Mama said.
Savage Nation, Obama on the couch, Obama on the couch, how bad is his woman problem? Again, I direct you to my website, michaelsavage.com, where you can read my entire analysis of the Sarah Palin pig with lipstick comment, and I believe it could be the beginning of the end of Obama's campaign. But I'm more interested in what is Obama's problem with women, because I think he has a very serious problem with women. And the reason I say that is because I've watched this man emerge from the fogs of the Chicago area. Never heard of him. And out of this nefarious, foggy background comes a man who the media glorifies and who we the American people have an obligation to find out who he is if he wants to lead our country. After all, this is not a man who is simply going to be an ambassador. This is not a man who is being held up to be a judge or something to that effect, where you wouldn't even pay attention to it. This is the man who wants to go from 0 to 100 based upon propaganda. Now, as I say, McCain is a flawed man. McCain is a centrist. McCain is not truly a nationalist. McCain wants to melt down borders, language, and culture, just as do all of the other neocons, and I understand that. But on the issue of national security and loyalty and where his loyalties lie, John McCain is 100%. He's the right stuff. And there's no question about that. And I think that as the campaign is going on and on and on and on and on, and it's been an endless one, this old man, this old warrior, this old guy, John McCain, seems to be getting tougher while Obama seems to be coming apart. And the lipstick on a pig statement is an example of a man making a big mistake. And that's why I'm saying, does it evidence a woman problem? I think it does. And that's why I'm asking, why have women abandoned his campaign in droves? And I think to answer this, we have to return to Obama's childhood and examine his relationship with his mother. It's a very important story, Obama's mother. He himself writes about it in his own autobiography of his globe-trotting mother, twice divorced. First the gentleman from Kenya, then the man from Indonesia, a few years later divorce. Then she goes globe-trotting Hawaii, Indonesia, Pakistan, sometimes taking Obama with her. Sometimes she leaves him behind. And I believe that this excessive separation between Obama and his mother has led to an Oedipal complex, in Freudian terms, which in some cases can lead to a sense of helplessness. And a person who feels helpless as a child often becomes an overly controlling adult who exhibits self-sufficiency, which is not really there. And that is the arrogance that many of us have seen in Obama, this preening self-satisfaction that is in fact an insecurity complex that is masked in plain English. Now, what does it have to do with the fact that he wants to be president? Well, perhaps an awful lot, and it's something you have to understand why I'm doing this. I'm doing it for three reasons. One, because this show is, as usual, the unusual. Two, you've all heard the pig in a lipstick comment all day long. But three, nobody else has done a Freudian analysis of Barack Obama, as I am attempting to do as an amateur here. I am not a psychiatrist, nor am I a psychologist. I have read some. I've read, I think, all of Freud. I think I've read all of Jung, most of Jung. And I read a good deal of Adler along the way. These were giants in their field. They are giants in the field who have been pushed aside by the drug companies and the minions of shrinks who use medication instead of analysis. Not because they are not capable of analysis. It's just that people don't have the time nor the patience to be analyzed anymore. And so Freud has fallen out of favor, as have Jung to a certain extent, and Adler no one ever heard of anymore. But the fact is, these giants of Freud, Jung, and Adler, these are giants, these are mountaintops, these are the peaks that every therapist has to cross in order to go into the Valhalla of being a good therapist. Whether they use Freud doesn't matter. They must know Freud in order to be a therapist. And that's the problem. Many shrinks today are not shrinks. Many of them are sort of, they go to these shady, you know, diploma mills. They learn marriage and family counseling, and they don't know the first thing about the intellect behind these theories, nor do they care. And they give you the mumbo jumbo and blah, 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 and they collect the check. And you go out because you either you had to go because you were in a drunk tank and they made you go, or you hit somebody for anger management. They made you listen to the crackpot or whatever. But it's not real analysis in the old school variety. Now, of course, I'm not here to discuss which variety of psychiatry or psychology is better. I'll leave that to you to decide. I am using the Oedipal complex, which was developed or discovered by Freud, in order to analyze Obama because of the woman problem that he apparently has. And I am saying to you, I think Obama has a woman problem. He both wants to win their approval and control women at the same time. Unfortunately for Obama, Sarah Palin is not the kind of woman who responds well to control. And millions of women who are like Sarah may be traditional in their love for men, but they are feminists in terms of self-reliance. And attacking such strong women in an attempt to control them has never worked, and it will not work for Obama. He's almost unable to control this relationship. He's trying to control a relationship in the campaign, and he has no way to do so. There's nothing this man can say or do to gain control over the Sarah Palin issue. None. He can't do anything. If he says she's wonderful, bingo. That's not good. If he criticizes her, that's not good. So it slips out through the lipstick on a pig comment. Now, I am going to ask you, if you're a psychiatrist or a psychologist, a really well-trained one, please don't call otherwise, just for this half hour. I'd like you to call the Savage Nation. Tell me whether you agree or disagree with my amateur analysis as I put Obama on the couch. And I invite you to michaelsavage.com to analyze me. Carolyn Grand Rapids, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Dr. Savage. It's good to talk to you, and it's quite a privilege. I am a psychologist, and I would like to just tweak your theory just a little bit. And
I wish.
My perspective.
No, I wish you. I'm very happy you're doing it, because I'd like more to be added to it. So please go forward.
Okay, I guess I would like to start with the conclusion that I'm drawing. The conclusion you're drawing is that he has an Oedipal complex. The conclusion I'm drawing from the types of behavior that you are explaining is narcissistic personality disorder. Okay, what I think happened to him is, if you go back to his childhood, and if you just go back to childhood in general, there's a psychological theory that was put forth by Chess and Thomas that basically is called the goodness of fit. Every parent has this, and every child has it. Basically,
wait, please, the goodness of what?
Goodness of fit, F-I-T, fit.
Okay, what does that mean?
Okay, what that means is that when a woman is pregnant, she has certain expectations before the child is born. You know, you very seldom hear somebody say, I hope my child is disabled. I hope my child is stupid. I hope my child will go to jail. No, they have a different expectation for what they want. They want an attractive child. They want a smart child. They want a child that has a good temperament that they can deal with. So they have a parent has a certain set of expectations about what they want from the child that they are going to have.
Okay.
Conversely, when the child is born, and as the child grows, the child has expectations of what they want in a parent.
Wow.
They want somebody that's there for them. They want somebody that understands them. They want somebody that supports them. They want somebody that understands the temperament that they were born with. They want somebody to accept the fact that they're at a certain academic level or lack of level. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So things work the best when the expectations of the parent meet the expectations of the child and vice versa. So when that happens, you have a good fit between the mother and the child.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is that very seldom happens, you know, 100% of the time.
Of course, there's always a disconnect.
Right. So what happens is that when you don't have a goodness of fit, that's what I really think has happened here. Obama had certain expectations of his mother that were never realized. And it really almost doesn't matter why. If she was traveling, if she left him, if she took him, whatever expectations he had of his mother were not realized.
Well, then he also has the multiracial problem, where he even in his own autobiography says he's sitting in the theater watching Black Orpheus, and he wants to walk out because it's so much juvenile in its depiction of black people. But then he looks at his mother in the theater and sees her enjoying it, and he sees the 16-year-old mother who has an idealized version of blacks. And then he sees another part of his mother that he's not too happy with, in essence.
Correct. So what I think happened is that, you know, if you look at narcissism just in general and narcissism personality disorder, it's what psychologists and the psychological profession call a personality disorder, which means it's inherent, it's characterological. It means it's inherent in your personality versus something that happens to you, like you're depressed because there was a death in your family. Okay.
So do you agree with me that Obama appears to have some sort of woman problem?
Well, I think it's there, but I think I would look at it in a different way. I think.
Well, hold on. You're so good, Carol. You're so good that I would let you analyze me. Frankly, I would send you a free airline ticket and a hotel to come out and spend 2 days analyzing me. I'd like you to get into my head. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you psychological nudity, Savage Radio stories as a primer on my inner mind. And by the way, there's a CT scan of a sliver of my brain if you really want to look at the anatomy of my head. Carol, please stay on the line. We'll come back to Carol, you're a psychologist,
yes,
Carol?
Yes, Dr.
Carol, did you read Freud at all when you were coming up in school?
There was some of it, but it's interesting that you talked about Jung and Adler, because I went to the Adler School of Professional Psychology, so I understand
right.
What you're talking about.
All right, fine. No, it's important that you have some traditional training, because you know the young ones are coming out of school with zero traditional training.
Well,
it's virtually, it's like lab rats being reprogrammed through behavioral modification as opposed to psychoanalysis. I'll be right back with Carol to talk about Obama's woman problem. Be here.
Papa said yes, but Mama said no, no, no. She said you can't marry my daughter, so stay away from my door.
All right, that's not my kind of song, but all right, here we are. Welcome back. We're doing a little amateur analysis of Obama because of the pig. Play the Lipstick on a Pig short version for the people who've lost us. True, the trees for the forest thing here. They don't know where we're at.
You can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig. You can wrap an old fish.
All right, we got it. That's a big mistake. He's alienated women. He's trying to cover for the fact that he has a woman problem. And the fact of the matter is we're analyzing his relationship with his mother, who was a free spirit traipsing around the world, following her own self-interest, and inherently, there's nothing wrong with that. She was a free spirit, a Sarah Go Lightly type. But the narcissism of his mother has reflected upon the son, and that son now wants to be president. And I think we have an obligation to analyze what effects this might take if the man becomes supreme leader of the Western world. You know what you're trying to anoint this man? You know what you're trying to give this unknown man? Control over your destiny? McCain, you know what you're going to get. He's not going to steal your freedoms. I'm not so sure that that's true about Obama, incidentally. And again, I invite you to look up my psychological nudity book on michaelsavage.com. And if you can tell me which story you're most looking forward to, you'll get a free copy if you get on the show in this hour. Grand Rapids, Carol, let's go back to Carol. You're a therapist. What else do you have to give us?
Okay, what you're calling the Oedipal complex, I see as misogyny. Because of the lack of goodness of fit between him and his mother, I think that he hates his mother. He needs her as
he resented his mother for having abandoned him. Correct.
Correct, and not being the mother that he wanted her to be. And I think whether she had narcissistic personality disorder or she had narcissistic tendencies, personality disorders tend to be genetic. And if
look, this is true for millions upon millions of men. They've had bad relationships with their mothers, and then they turn out. No one's perfect, Carol. You know that. I've done a show on mean mothers once on the Savage Nation. I heard stories that make your hair stand up. I don't know if you heard it. Mothers who beat their sons. They were calling the show left and right from all ethnic backgrounds. You know, not all of them became psycho killers. They didn't all become, nuts. Some do, though. Some do become crazy from it, don't they?
Difference, though, between what we're calling a characterological disorder in personality disorders, rather than just an average kid who experienced a tough childhood. And so,
do you think the lipstick on a pig comment indicates misogyny?
Oh, absolutely. I think he hates his mother, and I think in turn he hates everybody else. And to me, what kind of solidifies that...
Carol, how can I get you out here to analyze me?
I would love to meet you. I would love to meet you.
Carol, stay on the line. I'm very serious. This woman is so good. I'm going to have her on the show if we can get her. Get Carol's address and email. I'm going to communicate with Carol, and I'm going to really get into my psychological nudity.
Savage.
Darling, you send me. I know you send me. Darling, you
send me. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. So I'm going to get that therapist out here and get to the bottom of my psyche here. But I think we've covered this pretty good. We'll continue to talk about Obama's woman problem because I think that he has a problem with women voters if you don't want to get into the psychology of it. We know that just on a political level, on a simplistic political level, he's in trouble. And here's another story. Muslim cabbies lose round in court. Well, there is justice after all. Muslim cab drivers whose religious beliefs apparently go against driving passengers who carry alcohol have lost another round in court. It's about time. The Minnesota Court of Appeals ruled yesterday against the cab driver's attempt to block penalties for refusing service. You know what's going on, don't you? A lot of the cabbies are Somali Muslims who came there, and instead of doing as Romans do while in Rome, they wanted the Romans to become, in essence, Somalis. And they said, hey, you know what, if you're blind and you have a seeing eye dog, you're not coming in my cab because dogs are dirty. That's the Muslim faith according to them. Then they said, oh, you're carrying alcohol even though it's closed and it's a wine bottle, you're not coming in my cab. You hear this? So the people have had enough of this garbage and they sued them and they wanted to punish them and throw them out of the cabbie business. Since the commission began keeping track in 2002, there have been over 5,200 recorded instances of Muslim cabbies refusing service to passengers at the airport because they didn't like the fact that they were carrying alcohol or they had dogs, even seeing eye dogs. This issue has simmered for years before the commission decided the penalties were needed to ensure that customers would get reliable taxi service at the airport and that compromises proposed by the drivers were impractical. The drivers who say the airport rules infringe on their religious freedom appeal the lower court's refusal to grant a temporary injunction blocking those penalties from taking effect. In other words, they're imposing Sharia law through our courts, and it's about time we stood up to these retrogrades in the airport. And I would also go a step further. I'd pull a license from any cab driver who won't give a ride to a blind person or tells me I have no right to carry a closed bottle of wine. Go back to the place you came from if you don't like America. It's the land of the free and the home of the brave. And if you don't like it, go back to Somalia. And so let's go for this already. Stop rolling over to these people. Now, what does that have to do with Obama? Nothing. Or does it? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. What do you got to say about this? Hey, hey, ho, ho. Jillian, San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I have to say, it's a total honor listening to you. My husband introduced me to you a couple months ago, and I have to say I'm on your website every day trying to read up, find out things, and I wanted to let you know I'm really looking forward to your book, and especially what if John McCain's middle name were Jesus?
Okay, then you win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Even if you've ordered one, you're going to get a free one now, Jillian. So stay on the line. We'll get your name and address and send it to our fulfillment house in Florida, and that book will be going out to you. You'll get it around November 1st, as will anyone else who is expecting it. Again, available only on a website. Let us see. There's such good callers out there, honest to God, and I knew we'd get them today. You know, when I came up with this idea today, I knew that I'd get some of the best callers of the radio. This is what I specialize in, and I think it's a great idea. Will it be talked about? No. No, because even when my ideas are leagues beyond the ordinary, as in this case, in the political arena, there is a rule which says you must never mention Michael Savage, especially if you're a neocon, because neocons must forever pretend that only they control all avenues of truth. Look, the fact is the audience listening to the show expects the unusual, and that's why I give you the unusual as often as possible, so long as it's not simply done for effect. Okay? Santa Maria, Lincoln, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Dr. Savage, I think you're right on target with Barack Obama's Oedipal complex, and I think it's in fact applicable to most liberal men today. I think they tend to see in all women a chance to rescue, please, or even find their mommies. I think
wow. Ooh. Well, you know, Bill Clinton, I'm sorry to tell, didn't Bill Clinton have a, I don't remember his family psychodrama, but did he not, didn't he have a father problem? The father wasn't around or something. Do you remember?
I think his biological father died young, maybe, but he had a stepfather involved, and even that stepfather left the scene in his teen years, I believe.
Okay. But his mother, he had an issue with his mother, or didn't he?
Well, I guess under the circumstances of his father, I would imagine he must have had an issue with his mother. But I think there's a story goes that he stood up to his drunken stepfather once when he was 14, and it was portrayed as being heroic at the time. And of course, I think man left the scene. I could be wrong about that. But
let's go back to the original premise, which I liked, with that many liberal men, in essence, have a reverse misogyny, which comes out to be the same thing. By over-idealizing a woman, by putting a woman on a pedestal, you're putting demands upon her that are unrealistic, and she's only going to fall off that pedestal. In a way, you want to push her off the pedestal once she becomes too real to you. Isn't that true?
Well, I think so. And moreover, in the choice he's made for a wife, I see a man who's looked for somebody to be a more solid father figure to him, in fact. I mean, by her demeanor, her countenance, the way she speaks, the things she says, I mean, I get the impression he's a milquetoast and he's the court eunuch in his own home.
Wow, press the buzzer on that one. Well, no, she's a tough wife, but I wouldn't go so far as to say he's the court eunuch in his own house. Come on. But the fact is, you're saying, you suspect, as I suspect, that he has a very serious woman issue. And the lipstick comment was almost indicative in a way. It slipped out.
Yeah, I'm going to let him slide on that only because it's such a commonly used term amongst the politicos of Washington. So I'm going to give him a pass on that, but I think it is somewhat telling. I think we can dig into far other greater things about him that are more telling on his women issues than that in particular. I'm letting this
go back to your original. Please go back to your original statement about liberal men. Just repeat it. I've forgotten it already.
I think that most liberal men see in women the chance to rescue, please, or even find their mommies. And you know, I think...
You mean the overly clinging feminist male, that kind of thing?
Yes. For some reason, I think of Phil Donahue, because I don't know why he comes to my head, but I just see him as such a milquetoasty kind of a man, almost apologetic to be a man,
Yeah, but you know, most women don't want to be put on pedestals because they understand that you're setting them up for the fall when you do that.
Well, it seems like it used to be that way. I think men no longer rule the house. It has to be a split decision, and I don't know. I think that there has to be somebody in the house that makes the final decision. And of course, traditionally, we know that used to be the man, and now women want their stake. But you know, you can't have co-presidents of a country. I mean, it's spidery, vein-like in its issues. But
we all know we're voting for a man and a woman in every election today. There's no question. Any man who's been married for any period of time understands that decisions are not made in a vacuum. So there's nothing wrong with a man and a woman. The question is, what kind of woman are we going to get and what kind of man are we going to get, which is what we're talking about today, Lincoln.
True.
It's not so bad that he has an Oedipal complex, if that's what it is. It's a question of the degree to which Obama suffers the Oedipal complex and what effects it might have upon him as a leader if he should become president. In other words, what would his policies be? Would he bend over backwards to make certain that the liberal women who are his core base are satisfied by him? Notice the emphasis on the word satisfied by him. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
All right. So what do liberal women want from a president? What do they want? They want more abortion, not less abortion. They want more sex education earlier, liberal women want. What else do liberal women demand of a president, Lincoln?
You know, I want... It's almost kind of trite to say, but I think women want men to be women, and we're still dealing with that issue. Women have forgotten the beauty of what a terrible word that is, but of what how good men can be in their own dirty, hardworking, blue-collarish kind of way. You know, I mean, we get down and dirty to make a family and a living for our families, and we do hard work and use common sense. And women, God, I don't want to get too traditional in my thinking, because God knows I got sisters and a good, strong wife, but I just think women provide the emotional stability to a home, and women want more emotional stability from men. They want that kind of a touchy-feely kind
of... Yeah, in the traditional sense, but I'm asking another question, which is, if Obama became president, what kind of husband would he be to the liberal women who elected him? What do liberal women want? They want more abortion rights. They want more education for children. What else do liberal women demand of a leader or of a husband? What do they want? That's the most telling question today. He would have to satisfy his liberal constituency, mainly liberal women. What is it liberal women want? I don't even know. I don't know any liberal women. I haven't any idea what a liberal woman wants. If you're a liberal woman who listens to the show because you know that I'm the most brilliant man you ever met and you wish to God you could meet me, even though you say you hate my politics but you're addicted to the show because you wish to God you had met a man like me 35, 40, 20 years ago, or even today, call me at 1-800-449-8255, not to get a kiss on the cheek, but to tell me what liberal women want and what it is you think liberal women would demand of the husband of America called Obama, and why, and conversely, why they fear the old white Republican male naval aviator John McCain, because he represents the old patriarchy, doesn't he? This is a very, very interesting show, I got to tell you. McCain, this is a very clear there is a very clear psychological differential between John McCain and Barack Obama, and put race aside, that's too obvious. We don't need to even go there. You got the old white guy, patriarch, pilot, warrior, okay, who's actually grandfatherly and nice because he's somewhat liberal. Then on the other side, we have the unknown guy. We don't even know how to define him. What does Obama represent to liberal women in general? Why are they so in love with him, aside from his policies? What is his sex appeal to liberal women exactly? And now I'm going to get into something that may somewhat make you uncomfortable. Is the appeal that Obama has for liberal women similar to the appeal that Obama's mother felt for the two men she married? Is there some kind of psychology here, almost a reversal, where all of the liberal women of America suddenly become his mother? You get that one? This is I think it's fascinating. I realize it's not ordinary, but that's okay. The ordinary bores you too. 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. But really, this is all we want to talk about. Is that not true? We got callers from around the country, incidentally, on this program, and we're talking about the pit bull. Play the pit bull, the bull image again. The lipstick. I'm getting nuts from it already.
You know, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig. You can.
You know what? I don't understand the liberal screeching. I don't get that. The women. I hate that. What's that? Where does that come from? That really disturbs me. What is that hysteria? These are feminists who claim that a woman can do anything. Women can fly, women climb mountains. The minute they got Sarah Palin, they hated her. They said, you can't both climb a mountain and be a mother. Well, for years they're saying women fly, so finally a woman comes up out of nowhere. And by the way, this is an interesting part about Sarah Palin. She did this without a husband pushing her. In other words, you could say, well, Hillary Clinton's a strong woman too. Yes, but she was following in her husband's footsteps. This one was not is not following in her husband's footsteps. He's basically the house, you know, father. She's the leader. She's the one who wears the pants in the family. So Sarah Palin represents everything feminists ever called for. And here they're attacking her saying, oh, well, you can't be a vice president and a mother, particularly of a handicapped child. Ooh, hypocrisy isn't even the word that applies in this case. It's well beyond hypocrisy. But rather than spending time in the name-calling, which certainly I do too often on this show, I'd rather try to elevate the conversation again back to the psychological. Because, and I don't want to make a comparison between Obama and Mr. Adolf of Germany, but we're going to make it a comparison in another way. There's no comparison at all politically, none whatsoever. However, the deep psychological problems that Adolf Hitler had and suffered as a result of his childhood were reflected in a madness and a psychosis that plunged the world into a war, World War II, that cost the lives of 50 to 100 million people, the last I estimated, the most abominable suffering imaginable, all traced to a very, very, very dysfunctional, if you want to put it in modern terms, childhood. Obama had a dysfunctional childhood. Don't look at it any other way. You can't. Don't deny it. I understand that many people listening to this show are single parents. That is not what I'm talking about. You can be raised by a single parent and not have a dysfunctional childhood. You can be raised by two parents and have a dysfunctional childhood. There is no question that when you have a flighty mother who is narcissistic and leaves children to go pursue her own studies and ditches the kids to go to Indonesia and Pakistan, and I want to get a PhD. And by the way, it was a flaky PhD. I have to tell you, not all PhDs are equal. Not everything is equal just because it's a PhD. It was a flaky PhD in nothingness. The fact of the matter is, he had a flaky mother who was a free spirit. I like free spirits. They often don't make very good parents. The children suffer from that. He suffered. Now he's recovered from that by marrying a strong, domineering woman who is altogether a fine person, I'm sure. I may not like her politics, but there's nothing wrong with Michelle Obama. She's just a tough lady, and she looks like a very domineering woman. It looks like she does wear the pants in the family. That, again, is not unusual. However, when it comes to the presidency, you have to ask yourself, what effects might that have upon his policies? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Papa loves Mambo. Mama loves Mambo. Look at him sway with it. Getting so gay with it. Shout no lay with it. Wow.
Bow. Savage Mambo. Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Phone number from anywhere in the United States of America. MichaelSavage.com, the editorial today, or the monologue, is Obama on the couch. We've got him on the couch because of the lipstick remark. And go read it, and what can I tell you? If you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. We'll go on. There'll be another monologue tomorrow. Of the making of many monologues, there is no end, said Ecclesiastes to me. Years ago, I met him in the desert. He was an olive grower, Ecclesiastes. He wasn't a bad guy. He had bad breath, but it was they didn't have Colgate in those days. And I said to him, how are things? How are things? What are you asking? I should tell you. He said, of the making of monologues, there is no end, I can guarantee you. Hawaii, Lisa, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I want to let you know that I'm probably someone who will never vote Republican in my life, but I enjoy listening to you because you're rational. I don't necessarily agree with your premise, but I can see the logic of where you go with the thought, and I really admire and appreciate that because that's so lacking.
It is lacking. Rationalism is dead in America. It's all sentimentalism and feeling. And, what can I tell you? I mean, I don't really care what a person's politics are. I hope they'll understand what I'm saying when I say borders, language, and culture. But aside from that, I don't expect everyone who listens to the show to agree with me. But what do you think about Obama's woman problems? I mean, you may not make as much out of the lipstick on a pig thing, but as a liberal woman, what would you like to see Obama do if he became president? What would you expect from him?
Honestly, the big thing that I've had a problem, although I don't want to vote Republican, I can't quite picture myself pulling the lever for the Democrat either because of his inexperience. But
that says enough. How can you gamble a country on a man you don't know? As I say, McCain is a liberal guy. He's middle of the road, but he's rock steady when it comes to certain issues, and you never could question the man's loyalty. It's impossible. So that's why I think the election's moving in that direction. You know, there's another element. You know, I grew up loving Gauguin and exotic things myself. I spent so many years traveling and looking for nirvana. I never found it. In fact, but exoticism is what Obama represents to many liberals. The charming Obama. He is the unfamiliar. He's the archetype. He's the artistic archetype of the unfamiliar in the political landscape. And so many people who are emotional are saying, oh, yes, let us try him. Let us try this exotic character, Obama. What an interesting exotic name. Let's gamble away America's future on this individual. After all, there's nothing at stake here. Let us gamble on Obama. He's so unwhite. He is so unlike uptight Republican white men. Let us try him. Well, this is not a smorgasbord, my friends. This is a nation. Nations come and nations go. I'm not willing to gamble. How about you? It's the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
But you know, you can't, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
One of the great lessons of that campaign is the continued and accepted role of sexism in American life.
John McCain says he's about change, too. Except, and so I guess his whole angle is, watch out, George Bush. Except for economic policy, health care policy, tax policy, education policy, foreign policy, and Karl Rove-style politics, we're really going to shake things up in Washington. That's not change. That's just calling some the same thing, something different. But you know, you can't, you know, you can put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig.
Oh, my papa, to me he was so wonderful.
Oh, wonderful. Wasn't so good.
No one could be.
Oh, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
So gentle.
We are putting Obama on the couch and asking how bad his woman problem is. Again, I'm not going to repeat what I've already done. Please go to my website, michaelsavage.com, and read my monologue on it, and you decide whether there's any Freudian elements here with regard to an Oedipal complex. But most importantly, the question is, you know, what it means with regard to his campaign. A, he's shot himself in the foot. That's A. That's because millions of women like Sarah Palin may be traditional in their love for men, but they're feminists, nevertheless, in terms of self-reliance. And by subtly attacking such strong women to control them, as he tried to do here, Obama, it has never worked and it will not work for him. It's a big mistake. Now, here's an article that is possibly related, not with regard to Obama, but with regard to his followers, the magic mystery followers. Cannabis linked to early psychosis onset. As you well know, marijuana is an entry-level drug. As you well know, I would say far more liberals smoke pot and smoke pot than do conservatives. And as I've told you before, when I was younger, I smoked a lot of pot. I gave it up many, many years ago because I found it was weakening me. And I knew that the things I had to do in life were not compatible with smoking marijuana. As I grew up, I ditched it a long time ago. And I am telling you that the red diaper doper babies, the RDDBs in America, are the people who are not only going to vote for Obama, but worship Obama. It has connections to many, many elements. He is the exotic. He is the charming, exotic figure that the liberal has sought and will continue to seek both in art and literature. An archetypical example would be the artist and writer Paul Gauguin and his representations of Tahitian people that were not real, but they were representations of Tahitian people in the manner in which Gauguin did them. The landscapes, they were, again, they were charming, they were exotic, but they weren't real. Obama is not real to them. Obama is a painting that they would like to see made into the president. And I don't know about you, but I'm not willing to gamble on a painting running the country. And the reason so many liberals are enchanted with the unusual is because of marijuana, because of their addiction to the substance. And again, I have told you this for years. I've tried to counsel you and warn you. But a new study published by Reuters, and Reuters, as you well know, is certainly not conservative, it's liberal, reports on a study that just came out of Spain, strong and independent link between cannabis use and the onset of psychosis at a younger age. The association cannot be explained by chance and is not related to gender or the use of other drugs. It is, however, related to the amount of marijuana used. And Dr. Ana Gonzalez Pinto from Santiago Apostle Hospital in Vitoria, Spain, wrote in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry, given that cannabis use is extremely prevalent among young people, she's trying to warn them that it accounts for about 10% of the cases of psychosis. And this is based on 131 patients ages 15 to 65 years of age who needed inpatient care for a first psychotic episode during a two-year period. And they evaluated and did this and blah, blah, blah. And they compared them to non-users of marijuana. And they said that in further analysis, the effect of cannabis on age and onset was not explained by the use of other drugs or by gender. They also know. The finding was similar to the youngest patients also related to cannabis use. And the conclusion was, these results, quote, point to cannabis as a dangerous drug in young people at risk of developing psychosis, close quote, says Gonzalez Pinto and colleagues, according to the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry for August 2008. Now, the reason I'm talking about marijuana, psychosis, and the phenomenon of Obama is because these are intimately related. How else can you explain an unknown man who has no history whatsoever, never wrote a word that anyone will remember, didn't find the cure for polio, he didn't fight in combat in Iraq or Afghanistan and win the Medal of Honor or the Distinguished Flying Cross. He has no background in war. I mean, normally an unknown man comes back from a war and he's a hero and people want to vote for him. But to see a man who's done nothing be elevated to Godhead like this is an example of propaganda and the power of the media. As you well know, the press is the reason Obama has gotten so far so fast. And now, of course, the press is so embarrassed by their slavish worship of Obama that in order to save some of their credibility, whatever is left of it, they're trying to show that they're fair now by ridiculing him in some ways, and he can't take it. Now the real man is starting to come out. The minute they stopped hero worshiping him, he's starting to look different. His face looks weaselly. He is starting to have that look that he's hidden very well. I mean, it happens with any man when they're cornered. Obama is cornered, and he's starting to look cornered. And that's why he snapped today and said lipstick on a pig. Now, maybe I'm making too much of it. It wouldn't be the first time, nor will it be the last. But I think I've done a brilliant job so far on lipstick on a pig with regard to Obama on the couch and how bad is his woman problem. And again, I invite you to look into it. Again, I'm going to give out two books in this hour to anyone who knows one story in psychological nudity. Do we have one on the line right now? Here it is, Connecticut. Derek, quickly, go ahead, please.
Hi, I was just wondering in the book if you had about how you put yourself through school.
You actually have to look up on michaelsavage.com the book Psychological Nudity. Go to the contents page, look at the 75 stories, and if you call me with one of those stories that you're looking forward to reading, you will win a free copy of Psychological Nudity. And again, I want to remind you, I specialize in psychological nudity. I've been doing this to myself on this show for years, 15 years. So I'm doing it to Obama. There's nothing unusual about this. I apply psychological nudity to me. So I'm applying it to him. I mean, you've analyzed me. Many people have on the internet. I've seen what they say about me sometimes, and I reject it. What do I care what people say? If you're a public figure as I am, you have to expect people to say things about you, some true, some false. But the fact is, that's what a public figure is supposed to expect. And either you have thin skin or you don't have thin skin. Nobody likes to be ridiculed. I don't know a man on earth who likes to be ridiculed. But it happens. If you're going to put yourself out there, you can expect the flack. And that's it. So now the press is turning on Obama by showing him for not being the perfect, you know, God that he likes to project himself as being. In a second, right after this cluster of ads of the wonderful people who support the Savage Nation, we have an interview with Daniel Flynn on Obama's radical connection. Certainly very important. Certainly very important. I'm going to make a prediction. Unless they ditch Biden and take Hillary, they're finished. I'll be back.
Savage.
With the media and tons of money blindly supporting Barack Hussein Obama, there isn't a lot of background about him or his backers coming out to be heard. Daniel Flynn, author of A Conservative History of the American Left, joins us today to talk about some of the people supporting Obama. Daniel Flynn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Well, give us some background on these people.
Back in 1968, a lot of the leaders of SDS and a lot of the other radicals were, you know, they rioted at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and they urged young people not to vote. To vote in the streets is what they said, instead of voting in the ballot box. And it's ironic that in that election, because of their opposition to Hubert Humphrey, they cost the Democrats the White House. But now, if you fast forward 40 years later, these same people are some of Barack Obama's most enthusiastic supporters. And it's that support this time around that may cost Barack Obama the White House.
These Obama people, who are they?
Well, one of the fellows is a guy by the name of Mike Klonsky, and Klonsky was the leader of SDS in 1968. And his point, you know, when I talked to him last year, he said, you know, back then we thought we had to fight with Eugene McCarthy and these people. So SDS was not only opposed to Hubert Humphrey, but they were opposed to Eugene McCarthy, at least at the national level, and they were opposed to Bobby Kennedy. So it didn't matter who the Democratic nominee was. They were just intent on sort of crashing the party. Klonsky was so alienated from the system of American politics that in the 1970s, he started a communist party, you know, sort of a splinter, a schismatic group from the regular communist party. And so it's a little bit odd that someone whose politics are so extreme that he would found a communist party and he would be so out there that he would be urging young people not to vote in 1968 and rioting at the convention, if 40 years later would be blogging on Barack Obama's campaign website. I think it would be news if a Nazi were blogging on John McCain's website, but a guy who founded a communist party blogging on Barack Obama's website, somehow that's not news.
Well, why isn't there more focus on these supporters?
Well, I think that this is being discussed on talk radio, it's being discussed on the internet, but a lot of the Barack Obama supporters and their radical ties is not being discussed in the mainstream media, and it's going to get discussed one way or the other. I mean, I think the point is that, you know, if Barack Obama doesn't separate himself from these people, a guy like Bill Ayers is going to be as Willie Horton, and Bill Ayers is a guy who not only has been a patron to Barack Obama over the years, but Barack Obama has been a patron to him, whether it's his wife organizing a speaking event for his book, or him sitting on the same board of trustees for a foundation out in Chicago, or Bill Ayers hosting a fundraiser at his house for Barack Obama. Bill Ayers is one of the weathermen terrorists who in the 1970s went on a bombing campaign on the Capitol and the Pentagon and a lot of law enforcement agencies around the country. Back then, Ayers, you know, very publicly said that young people should kill their parents. Bernadine Dorn, who he subsequently married, she praised the Manson family. She got up in front of a Weather meeting, praised what the Manson family had done, and even the weathermen had adopted a split-fingered greeting to symbolize the fork that the Manson family had shoved in the stomach of Lena LaBianca, one of the victims of the Manson family. And so, I mean, if you couldn't think of two people you would not want to be your supporters. I mean, I'm sure Barack Obama would wish to trade these people to John McCain, but they are his supporters, and unlike the Reverend Wright, he hasn't come out and said, you know, it was a bad idea to associate with these people. I mean, this is a guy who wants to run the war on terror, and yet here he is for a long period of his life cavorting with people who were terrorists and who are unrepentant about their actions.
Why isn't Obama distancing himself from some of these people?
Well, I think the issue hasn't been raised loudly enough for him to do anything about it. I think probably Obama thinks that if he addresses this and he talks about the Bill Ayers of the world or Michael Klonsky, you know, blogging on his site, or the fact that Progressives for Obama, a group supporting him, is really just a who's who of the SDS of the 1960s, the Students for a Democratic Society. And so Barack Obama would rather just sort of ignore this, and a lot of the folks in the media are ignoring it with him, but it's going to come up, and it's going to keep coming up, and it's going to get louder and louder until he says something about it. Because after all, you know, Americans may not like the war, they may not like George W. Bush, but they don't want to have a president at a time when we're in a war on terrorism that is hanging out with actual terrorists, that has the support of people who are unrepentant about their actions in the 1970s. He needs to stand up and condemn those people, or condemn their actions, rather.
Do you think Obama's widespread support comes from people who just don't know what these radicals actually did?
Sure. I think that 40 years is a long time. And so Barack Obama, you know, not without justice, that he was 8 years old when the Weathermen embarked on their bombing campaign. So the fact that a guy like Mark Rudd, for instance, is a supporter of Barack Obama, progressive, you know, one of the progressives for Obama, people aren't going to know who Mark Rudd is. People aren't going to know that he was the leader of the group that shut down Columbia University in 1968. They're not going to know that his SDS group urged people to engage in sabotage rather than voting, and they mocked Bobby Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy as McKennedy, and said they were, you know, there was no difference between them and Lyndon Johnson. People don't have a sense of history, particularly people who were not alive at that time. So it is a task for people who are outraged about this to educate people that, hey, look, this is a major candidate for president, and he has folks supporting him who have never been in part of the political process, or at least haven't been part of the mainstream political process for a long time. And it raises questions. Well, why are people who were involved in communist parties in the 1970s, or who were involved in rioting at the Democratic National Convention in 1968, or who were involved in a Weatherman bombing campaign in the early 1970s, why are they so enthusiastic about Barack Obama? And these are some questions that Barack Obama has to answer.
Will this be a main focus before the general election?
Well, I think if the groundswell, if the media start talking about it, he's going to have no choice and address it. Reading the tea leaves, I think that, you know, more so than Reverend Wright, people like Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers and some of these other extremists who have come out and supported his campaign, and also people that he supported as well, this is going to be his swift boat. This is going to be his Willie Horton, unless he does something about it, unless he says, look, I don't want to have any part of these people. They may support me, but I don't support them. I think that's what he should come out and say, and that would be reassuring to people. But he hasn't said anything, and the fact that he hasn't said anything, condemning the actions of some of his supporters is a little bit troubling. 40 years ago, the same people who are enthusiastically supporting Barack Obama's campaign today as Progressives for Obama were rioting at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And the American people looked at what they did and they said, well, if the Democrats can't even run a convention, why should we entrust them to run the White House? Why should we entrust them to run the country? And so Hubert Humphrey lost by the slimmest of margins in that election in 1968. What's ironic is that then it was their opposition to the Democrats that cost them the White House. Now it may be their enthusiastic support that costs the Democrats and Barack Obama the White House, because people are going to look at some of the extremists supporting Barack Obama and say, hey, look, you know, if these are the people in Obama's camp, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Daniel Flynn, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Hey, appreciate you having me on.
Savage.
Heard me talk about the Mapping Sharia in America, Knowing the Enemy Project. It is manned by men and women, including Christians, Baptists, and Catholics, Muslims, both Sunni and Shia, Jews, and a few from yet other faiths. They realize that America and the West are confronting an existential threat from a political ideology driven by Islamic law, or what is termed Sharia. Very serious stuff. Joining us today is Dave Gabbitz, who is the Director of Intelligence and Counterterrorism Studies for the Mapping Sharia Project. He will give us some information they have recently uncovered about our dear friends at CAIR. David Gabbitz, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Tell us a little bit about your background and how you became part of this important project.
I had joined the Air Force in 1977. I spent over 20 years on active duty. 12 of those years I was a agent with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. I had the highest clearance possible. I worked counterterrorism, counterintelligence. I had a top secret above SCI clearance, retiring in 1998. After a couple of years, right before September 11th, I was contacted by OSI and asked if I would come back as a civilian federal agent in 1811, and I did. I came back right before September 11th. September 11th happened. Many of us knew something like this was going to be happening. That's one of the reasons I came back and joined. At that time, they knew that they did not have enough Arabic speakers. I never claimed to be fluent in Arabic, but they asked me to go to the State Department for one complete year right after September 11th for Arabic language school. And I gave everything I possibly could to learn Arabic, and I knew enough to be able to get around the Middle East. So at that point, OSI came to me and asked if I would go to Saudi Arabia 2 months before the war and start collecting intelligence to protect our troops. I was able to obtain intelligence about some of the insurgent groups along the border. I was only less than 30 miles from the Iraqi border at the time. Then when the war started again, our government asked me. They said, Dave, you're a civilian. You're not covered under the Geneva Convention, but would you go into Iraq as a civilian agent for us to collect intelligence to help protect our troops? I did that right at the beginning of the war. I met many, many good Muslim people there. I would not be alive today if it had not been for some of the Muslim people there. But I found out that from the Muslim people, there are groups that are targeting America. They're targeting for another terrorist attack, and they're targeting to start implementing Sharia law throughout the United States. That's when I came back in late 2003, got out the airplane. My daughter, who was 4 at the time, said, Dad, don't ever leave me again. I told her I would not. I would never leave her again. So I left federal service. Fortunately, Mr. Yerushalmi had contacted me a year or so later and asked me to help with this project.
Well, recently we heard about CARE threatening Muslims who may speak out against them. What can you tell us about this?
The one that you've read about in WND and Mapping Sharia pertaining to CARE and Morris Day, who was not an attorney but had represented himself to be an attorney, and CARE had represented him to be an attorney, is just one of the small samplings of what we've obtained so far. And this has came from the Muslim people themselves. Now, I would like to tell your listeners that in a source network, you have our FBI, good people, lower levels, a lot of red tape at the top. I would give their source network a very low score. CARE, their source network, gets a very high score. Mapping Sharia, me and our team, we have a much better source network than CARE and our FBI, and that right now is why CARE is on the ropes. They're not coming out right now. They're afraid of what intelligence we have obtained because it has came from the Muslim people. We have developed intelligence that indicates that CARE has victimized their own people.
No.
They have victimized the people that they're supposed to be protecting. They are always out in the media saying they protect the civil rights, they protect against discrimination, against hate crimes. CARE themselves has committed more discrimination and religious bias than any of the non-Muslim organizations have combined against them. And the Moore's Days is just one example. Many, many good Muslim people were hurt during this entire affair by CARE and Moore's Days. I have talked to many Muslims in the last 2 weeks. Right now, I can't reveal all of my sources, but I have talked to many Muslims in the last 2 weeks, and I would not come on any radio station or any other media outlet if I didn't have the evidence to back everything up. They have taken money from the victims, said they were going to provide legal assistance to them. They did not, and then they threatened many of these victims with a $25,000 lawsuit if they did come forward.
But CARE says their vision is to be a leading advocate for justice and mutual understanding. How can they attack their own people, their own Muslim brethren?
Well, I'll tell you, it comes back, and a lot of these are my opinions based on many, many years of investigative work, is that CARE is partially financed by Saudi Arabia. In the words of many people, CARE executives, which I will also bring forward later, through Muslim sources, CARE says they do not care how many discrimination cases they file every year, how many hate crimes cases they file every year. That means nothing to their big funders. What is important to their funders is that they have a good PR image and that they have good relationships with the media.
Are you kidding?
In their own words, they say they do not care about the Muslim people themselves and their cases and what problems they happen to have. They do care about getting money from the big funders, and PR is the name of the game.
Well, what has CARE threatened people with, according to your research?
I'll give you a brief example. Some of the people came to Moore's Days, CARE, in Herndon, Virginia, wanting some assistance for immigration, possibly some discrimination complaint. And then Moore's Day, representing himself being an attorney, took a sum. It ranged from maybe $250 to several thousand dollars from the individual. He said, "I will help you. CARE will help you." In the end, he did not help. A lot of the people started filing claims per my sources with CARE to try to get their money back and to get them to represent them in court cases that they paid money for. And some of the people had mortgage problems. They had to sell their refrigerators. They were having very hard financial times. And finally, they made enough complaints, according to the sources, that CARE did start contacting these individuals back after eventually months they terminated Moore's Days. After first covering up for Moore's Days, they contacted the victims, gave them some of their money back, and the cases, not always all the money back, and then they had them sign a release statement saying that they would not go forward with any kind of media legal action against CARE, and if they did do that, then they were going to sue them for $25,000. Michael, to sum it up in my words and how this affected some of the good Muslim people who were trying to get help through an organization they thought was supposed to represent them and help them. They paid the money. After months, weeks, they got no services from CARE. They brought it to the attention of CARE in Virginia, Herndon, and also CARE National. The first response, the majority of the times from what I've talked with the sources, is that they sent them to Moore's Jamil Days and said, try to get your money back from him if possible. They tried to keep the individuals quiet by signing their release forms. They did give them some of the money back. And at this time, from the sources themselves, they're very afraid. They're not only afraid of CARE, as many have spoke out in the past, they're very much afraid that they're going to get sued by CARE.
Well, what happens now?
Well, I think something's going to be brought up, because we're going to continue to put the pressure on. We're going to continue to bring only the truth. It's hard for CARE to fight the truth, and that's why they're having a difficult time with this. Before, with many other allegations against CARE, yourself, you have brought forward, they're great, they're true. Right now, what we have is evidence. We have Muslims themselves who are coming forward with evidence. This is what they're afraid of. And I think it's only going to be a matter of time before CARE makes a decision. One, they decide that they really don't represent the Muslim people and they're going to fold under. And or two, they're going to fight this just like they have with you. They're going to fight it through the legal systems. But I think in the minds now, they know they're going to lose, because you cannot fight the truth for so long. And we have the truth. We have it directly from the Muslim people themselves.
Dave Gabbitz, thanks for being on the Savage Nation and shining a light of truth.
Michael, again, I want to thank you. I really appreciate you having me on today.
Savage.
Put lipstick on a pig. It's still a pig. You can wrap an old fish in a piece of paper called change. It's still gonna stink.
Now let's go to clip two, because Obama's on the ropes, and he's trying to fight as a counterpuncher. He's not good as a counterpuncher. He's good on the give. He's not good on the take. He can't take a body blow. Listen to him in clip two.
I want to say a few words about the latest made-up controversy by the John McCain campaign. What their campaign has done this morning is the same game that has made people sick and tired of politics in this country. They seize on an innocent remark, try to take it out of context, throw up an outrageous ad, because they know that it's catnip for the news media.
Well, I don't think it's catnip for the news media as much as it is a woman problem that's been exposed. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. And I believe that the lipstick remark will plague him right to the voting booth. And I believe that it has already cost him hundreds of thousands of women voters who don't like that comment. And I want to reiterate again that my editorial or monologue, Obama on the Couch, which we put him on the couch today on the Savage Nation. And I believe he evidences an Oedipal complex. And I won't bore you with the details. You can read about it on michaelsavage.com. I think it's good. I think I brought a new vision to the campaign that has been sorely lacking, which is a psychological analysis of this candidate, in that he is unknown, in that he has a giant question mark over his head, in that we know an awful lot about McCain despite all of his flaws. We know what not to expect from him. We have too many question marks about this unknown candidate, Obama, to entrust the nation to him. And as I say to you, are you willing to gamble? Simply because he is exotic, simply because he has an exotic name, simply because he represents a romantic change from a white male. Not that there's anything wrong with a white male, but I understand liberals don't like white males, even though most liberals are white, just proportionate to the numbers of people who are living in this country. The majority of liberals are whites, but they don't like whites. They're self-hating, they're self-doubting, and they're willing to take a stab in the dark at anyone who is exotic. Sort of Ravel's Bolero. He's the Ravel's Bolero of the presidential candidacy. And if McCain represents the stars and stripes forever, I would say that Obama represents Ravel's Bolero. Now, I happen to like the Bolero. I just don't want to vote for Ravel. I also have an offer out there to anybody who has gone on to michaelsavage.com who wants to try to get a free book. We got a winner here. Trevor, you're going to get a free copy of Psychological Nudity if you tell me which story it is you can't wait to read. Trevor, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael, how's it going? You know, it's hard to just pick one. I don't even need to go to your website to pick the one that I want. So there's a few, but the one I really want to read is Tippy the Dog Dies and is Thrown Away in a Garbage Truck.
Oh, God, that's a sad story. But it's got the typical Michael Savage, you know, yin-yang in it. I mean, there's humor and there's sadness. It's the happy and sad cufflinks that I grew up with. And you're going to get a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Before you go, though, Trevor, stay in the line. Did you order this book yet?
You know, I was going to. I talked to you before. My dad's been, you know, I'm only 23. I've been listening to your show for almost 10 years now. My dad is big into you, but,
All right, well, you don't have to have ordered it. You're getting a free copy anyway. And stay on the line. We'll send you that as soon as it's available. I'm going to the printer with the final number tomorrow. 1-800-449-8255. Do you think Obama has psychological problems with regard to women? And again, I'm not saying this to be flip. I can do that. I've been known for it. I'm actually proud of this show today. And the reason I say it is that we have to ask ourselves who this unknown gentleman is. We are not simply saying he would make a fine ambassador. We're not simply saying he'd be a really good diplomat, which he would be. I think Obama would be a fabulous diplomat. In fact, I'd make Obama the representative to the United Nations, not president. This is way over his pay grade. This is so ridiculous that he got this far. It's only because the press is so poor in America, and the press is so Marxist in America, and the press is so naive in America that this unknown man has gone so far so fast. It's not that McCain is so great by comparison. It's just that, McCain is so great. It's that by comparison, McCain is George Washington. You understand what I'm saying? So that's it. It's not McCain is great, but compared to him, he's George Washington. So we got no choice here. I'm not going to drop the country in this guy's hands and say, sure, let's take a chance on him. Not when we have a slam of fascists around the globe, who, by the way, haven't gone anywhere. There are boys still dying, coming home maimed, coming home without arms, coming home in body bags, coming home without legs. No, sir. They haven't gone away. In fact, they're waiting. According to every analysis I've read, they're waiting and they're waiting and they're waiting, and they don't want to strike the country until the election is over because they're afraid of putting McCain into the White House because he would be tougher on them than would Barack Hussein Obama. And that's really important for you to understand. Now, pothead liberals don't understand any of this. They think that it was all invented by conservative Republicans. They think that Osama bin Laden is not real. They think he's an actor created by conservatives out of Detroit, Michigan. They think that Islamofascism is not real and it would just go away if only we'd stop provoking them. That shows not only their naivete, but their insanity. And we cannot permit insane people to elect a leader for this country, in my opinion. And that's why I'm saying we have to look at Obama and his woman problems and his possible psychological deficits. Because as a caller said earlier, if you go to get a job as a cop in any precinct in America, you have to go through a rudimentary psychological evaluation. I think you have to do that if you want to be virtually anything in government today. Certainly, if you want to go to work for the FBI, the Secret Service, they give you quite a grilling. Now, I would like to know if they vetted Obama as well as they would a man who would be his guard in the Secret Service. I kind of doubt it. If they were to vet Obama the same way they would vet people who would want to be protecting him, the guy wouldn't even be able to become a Secret Service agent. Did you hear what I just said to you? And you can take that to the bank. Do you know that because of Obama's associations in his past with William Ayers and others, because of his inflammatory pastor, that man could not even qualify to become a Secret Service agent? And yet you want him to become president? Why? Because you're a liberal. Because you can't think. You could only feel. And you feel that this exotic gentleman named Obama, well, you don't know much about him, but you know that he's not a white male. And even though you're a white male yourself, you don't feel good about being a white male. You wish it was somebody else, and that's why you use drugs all your life. All your life you've tried to be somebody else. Perhaps it was cocaine that you tried for a while that made you feel like another man, and that didn't work. Marijuana, that works temporarily, but you didn't become that other man. But in going with Obama, you can become another man. You can become another man through him. At least that's what you think. But in many ways, he's just another addiction. He's just simply another drug along the way of your sad and pathetic white liberal life. Well, that's it for psychoanalysis on the Savage Nation. I think I've put on the psychologist hat today and done a fairly good job. I hope you've enjoyed it. And again, I invite you to read my analysis of Obama on the couch because nobody in America has dared to do this. And I do hope you'll talk about it with your friends. Are you willing to gamble on an unstable man? Are you willing to gamble a nation on an unstable man? Are you willing? I'm not. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.